Good morning, everyone. We will get started. For speakers, I'll stand up in the last 3 minutes to give you a sign. And our first speaker is Dr. Wayne Edelhar.
Good morning, the diehards. Yes, good deal. Mississippi State has a new coach, Mike Leach. For those of you who follow Mississippi State besides me. But anyway, good morning. Welcome to the Friday morning session. I'm going to be talking about our work with cover crops or our lack of work with cover crops in Mississippi. But I'll be talking today, co-author on this is Richard Turner, who is my research associate and PhD student, at least for a couple of more months. He's looking to be done pretty quick. This particular project is sponsored in part by the Mississippi Cotton Incorporated State Support Program, so we really appreciate their input into the program. The project objectives is to investigate the potential for legume and non-legume cover crops compared to crop rotation. I've been working in crop rotation for about 20, 25 years now in Mississippi, and I've been looking at about anywhere from a 15 to a 22% advantage to cotton following corn versus cotton following cotton. And part of this project is to see if we can get in back to a continuous cotton, which I don't like, but looking to see if a cover crop may be able to give us some advantages going with that. We want to look at the water use efficiency. Now, I'm going to talk about the first part of this, but we are interested in water use efficiency. And the thing that I'm always interested in is looking at the economic implications for the project, because from a farmer perspective, and I'm an applied agronomist for the past 40 years, a farmer wants to know, can I make money at it? If you can't show him how to either reduce something or increase something, he's not willing to adopt it or adapt his program to that. So the economics are going to be really important. This is the area that we're located at Stoneville. This is where the Centennial rotation, and many of you have heard me talk about the Centennial location. This is the field that it's located in. The cover crop area is right beside it. That's the main study that I'll be talking about today. Then I also have a cover crop demonstration area. Delta Council, our local political action group, is located directly across the creek, and Delta Farm, which is a big proponent of cover crops and soil health, their window is directly across the creek from this. So there's reasons for locating certain experiments, as you well know. The systems that I will be talking about today are a corn-cotton rotation system, a continuous cotton system where the actual cover crop here is what we used for centuries, called winter weeds. We've gotten away from winter weeds now because of resistant weeds, but also looking at a system with either cotton or hairy vetch, cereal rye or hairy vetch, or a combination of the two, because one, cereal rye is used a lot, but it's a high C-to-N ratio material which ties up nitrogen, as opposed to vetch, which is a low C-to-N ratio, which should be mineralizable nitrogen there. This area is four-row plots. The subplots, we've got a nitrogen rate component to this, because when you're looking at something like cereal rye that may tie up nitrogen versus a legume crop that may produce nitrogen, then having the N rates in there. Now, this I've got it set up as a split plot for convenience of being able to put the treatments out. But I'm actually going to show you just a brief look at analyzing it as a split plot versus analyzing it as a factorial. Now, most of you may not be into statistics, but I get those questions all the time. And in this study, we're removing the center two rows. I have a few pictures in here. This is 2017. We were what I consider late getting the cover crop planted that year, because we had to get the previous crop out, get it subsoiled, get the fertilizer put out, get it rowed up, get it knocked down, and get it planted. So you see, and we are in a bedded system. Mississippi, on most of our row crop area except for rice, is going to be bedded. We've had farmers try to get away from that. They have not succeeded, so either they're back to beds or they're not farming. That's the two things that we see, especially in the Mississippi Delta. So one of the things I would like to point out in the lower two in the spring of 2018, you see how flat the beds were when we planted. So what we did then was to go back, no more. Once we killed it down, we just planted it. So you see, we actually had to adjust. If you look, let me see if I can make this mouse work. Okay, these rows, we actually adjusted the press wheels down some, trying to get some pressure so on the side of the beds. And if you go over and look at the one right beside it, you see that we didn't always get a good stand there, but you see on the top of the beds where most of your potential erosion would be or where the plants are going to be planted, you do get pretty good cover. Then you go down and you see we have some beds. Now, this is the area that was not planted to cover crops, but you see also how flat the beds are there. So this is an irrigated study. So this is what the field looked like. The top fields are the research fields. The bottom section there are actually the demonstration area that was fallow before planting the cover crops. And you see quite a bit of difference between the two, especially the cereal rye. Now, this was with no additional nitrogen, but the bottom area of cereal rye was from a fallow area. We've been trying to control nut grass in that area for a while. So getting into the results, this is the actual data from the 2018 crop. The cover crops were planted in the fall of 2017, and the crops grown the following year. Now, what's interesting to look at, the green bars in this case are 120 pounds of N. The yellow bars are 80 pounds of N, and you see them broken down here. But you'll notice that the highest yields are with the crop rotation. Now, I was actually surprised at that, but it's significantly, or it's 1,400-pound lint yields. Now, we take seed cotton harvest, but we gin through a tensile microgen to come up with a lint percent, calculate everything with respect to lint yields. But the thing that was interesting, if you look at the lowest, now, I'm not going to talk necessarily about the statistics because a farmer looks at pictures. And, of course, I can lie with pictures just as well as I can lie with statistics. But the weakest system here appears to be the vetch system, which that's controversial because it's different from most what everybody else sees, where vetch is usually the best system. In this case, it was at least numerically lower whether the nitrogen was added. There's a little bit of difference there, but no statistically significant difference between 80 pounds and 120 pounds of nitrogen. Now, this is 2018. This is 2019 growing season. Again, you see that cotton vetch system where we're growing cotton with the vetch cover crop, growing cotton with the vetch cover crop. Again, the best yields are with the cotton corn rotation. That, which is the reason I'm interested in this is because of the rotation effect. Now, if you look at the cotton vetch cotton rye system, now that is actually following rye in 2019. So that's pretty good yields, but still it's over 100 pounds of lint difference. So if the yields are lower, now, again, I'm interested in the economics, but I haven't added the economics to this. But any time that bar is less than what it is with crop rotation, there's no way that's going to make more money because I've got the cost of the seed, the cost of planting, the cost of killing it. In my case, it took two times on the vetch to get it killed. But anyway, now, this is averaged across the nitrogen levels in this particular case. It helps clear the picture up a little bit, but you'll notice with this, now, if I go in, this is with the split pod analysis, okay? With this, the corn-cotton rotation system is significantly higher than the cotton-vetch system there, the continuous vetch or the vetch cover crop system there, where it's not necessarily significant from some of the other systems, but it is from anything following vetch, okay? If we go to the factorial analysis where I technically, it depends on, if you got a true mathematician, statistician, they'll argue with me, but, you know, I would rather use the factorial analysis. It helps to separate a little bit better. Your error terms are not quite the same, but if your error A and error B in a split plot are not different, you can pool those and you use the same error term. So I chose to use to put both of them here. If I go to 2019, where I'm only showing you the factorial analysis here, but again, you see a substantial difference over 300 pounds of lint difference between the rotation system and then the vetch system. So, now, what's going on here? I mean, I'm a scientist, and I was told when I first started at Stoneville, which was over 40 years ago, that, you know, the guy ahead of me said, you know, I've created more questions than ever answered. So I'm trying to figure out what the heck's going on here. Well, one of the things, okay, the first year we got good, you saw the pictures, we got good cover crop growth. The second year we got the cover crop planted really late, got almost no growth. And in 2019, the seed's sitting in the building. We have yet to plant the seed. Well, let's look at 2017 rainfall. Okay, if you look at August, September, October, November, okay, not really wet months normally, so we were able to get the crop planted. Once we got the crop off, we were able to get the cover crop planted, so we got a good growth on it. Okay, that's 2017. Let's look at 2018. Oh, forgot. At the same time, I've got this demonstration study going on. So you see, I've got cereal rye, wheat, hairy vetch, winter cover. I've got treated Kaylee. I've got oats. I've got a little bit of everything in there. But this is just for demonstration purposes. This just gives you a picture of what some of them look like. The thing that I thought was really interesting here, this is the 2017 planting window. This is cover crops planted in 2017. But look at the difference between, okay, you see the top row is cereal rye, wheat, treated Kaylee. The next row, the big picture, okay, this is what we do. We row up, we knock it down, and roll it. So this area across the top was rowed up, knocked down with a do-all, and rolled. Okay, this particular field, okay, I have strips out there that are winter weeds only, and that is on a bed that was hipped up and left. Okay, right beside it, this is winter weeds, fall hip, do all and roll, just like we were doing to plant the cover crop, but we didn't plant a cover crop. It's amazing how clean it is. Now, why that happened, I don't know, but on the areas that were just hip, we got tremendous cover with winter weeds alone. So anyway, let me move on to the rainfall information. Okay, now this is 2018. Look at August, September, October, November, December. Above normal rainfall in every one of those months for the year. Our normal rainfall is 52.5 inches. 2018, we were at 77.95, about 25 inches above normal. So it made trying to get cover crops planted very difficult for us because we got to do some tillage work trying to get that cover crop in our system. Now, that's 2018. This is 2019. Our average is 50 inches of rainfall, or 52 inches. We got that in the first 6 months of the year. So we get out here. The only month that's really low was September, but you look at, we got 11 inches of rain in October. So we didn't get cotton harvested in this case until November. And it's been raining ever since. And I keep track of events of rainfall and events above an inch. So there's a lot of that going on. So we have yet to plant. We can't get the field dry enough to get into the field yet. And I had the first cotton defoliated and the last cotton harvested on the station. But 2019, we're 29 inches above normal for the year. So Mother Nature is she's messing with us pretty bad. So, you know, the cover crops and crop rotation, you know, what do we have to deal with? The cost. We've got land prep costs. We've got the cost of the seed, planting. We've got to go across the field with the planter. You've got burn down. Okay, herbicide carryover. You know, what you got to be careful about some of those kind of things. Okay, I call this adaption, adoption, finance, and economic impact. I need to hurry up. For a farmer, if it's not economical, he's not going to do it. You've got to be able to show him an economic impact to doing that, for him to be able to adopt it. You know, where does he get a savings from? Where does he get a benefit from? You know, what about winter weeds? So impact on pest. You know, will I be able to eliminate weeds with a cover crop? Now, in that demonstration area, it was clean. Now, once the stuff started dying down, then the weeds started coming through. But for the most part, if we would have burned that field down and planted it, it would have been clean. And we had a really bad nuts edge problem in there. We also had pigweeds in the field. But the cover crops eliminated those with a good cover crop. Overwintering insect pest, you know, is that going to be an issue? In our area, I was talking to Hunter earlier this morning in Virginia. They use a lot of crimson clover. In our part of the Mississippi Delta, we don't use crimson clover. It's an alternate host for Heliothus. So a cotton farmer would rather have no Heliothus than a crimson clover cover crop, I promise. Moisture depletion, you know, how much moisture does that cover crop pull out of the soil if you're in a, now we haven't been in a limiting situation in terms of that, but I was at the Tri-State Soybean Forum last Friday, and there was a plant pathologist or an entomologist there talking about root knot nematodes and the amount of root knot nematodes and all the cover crops that are alternate host for root knot nematodes, if that's an issue. So with that, I'm going to summarize. You know, is there a clear answer here? Not when Mother Nature gets a say-so, and she always gets a say-so. You know, the financial considerations are going to be the driving force here. You know, burn down's not as easy as folks thought it was going to be. It may take multiple applications, so that may be an additional expense. You know, Hunter said they don't have any trouble burning down. You know, it took us two tries to burn down the hairy vetch. It may be because we're trying to keep from drifting on other people, but, soil health and biodiversity, those are big key words, buzzwords that everybody's talking about. I'm just going to let that's where it is. But there's a lot more research that's needed, and we know that. And I've got 173 days left, but I've got some people that are very much interested in following, keeping going what I've got going, and so I'm really encouraged with that. So with that, I'll be glad to take any questions that if I've got time. I'll be glad to try to answer any questions. If I don't know, I'm going to make it up, and you'll never know the difference. Yes, sir. Yes, maybe, no, maybe, I don't know, maybe. I worked with interseeding cover crops for my PhD dissertation in the 70s, using simulated aerial application, which means I take a little red seeder and go through the field like this and seed it. The question about aerial seeding, yes, we do have people doing that. The larger the seed, like hairy vetch, you know, that's a pretty large seed. To get the right soil-to-seed contact to get that kind of a crop, you know, the clovers and things like that are a little bit easier to get up. The larger the seed, the more difficult, in my opinion, it is to get it up. We have a lot of farmers, if they're going to grow wheat, they will aerial seed it, but it's not nearly as good as drill seeding it. Other questions? Yes, ma'am. Was there stand issues with the vetch treatment? Yes. Part of it, in our case, is using beds. So our stand problems were really on the sides of the beds. We tried to adjust our planter units so that they would put more down pressure. You know, we raised the middle ones and lowered the side ones to try to get some down pressure. But, you know, the tricky part is getting the soil-to-seed contact that you need from... Oh, I'm sorry. The question was about stand issues with cotton. No, ma'am. We did not have a problem getting those stands because when we burned it down, we're burning it down usually at least 3 weeks ahead of planting. We don't even use a no-till planter. We use our regular planter to plant the cotton, and we get good emergence in our situation. Now, we've got those are old beds. They're firm beds. So, no, we don't. I've not had a problem with that, not on the cotton or the corn for that matter. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Whenever I start talking about crop rotation with
The question is about economics of the crop rotations versus the cover crops. I've got studies. The centennial rotation that I showed you earlier has completed 16 years so far out of a planned 100-year study. I'm not going to harvest the last 100 years, I mean the 100th year, but I have harvested the first 16 years. We do have the economic component, and what we're doing there, now this is strictly from a cost of production, and we're using for the price on cotton either the marketing price, the average annual cost, or the loan, whichever is higher. And when corn and soybean prices were high, they always, always overcame the cotton because of the response. That particular test is averaging 22%. Even in years where tremendous cotton yields of 1,500 pounds following cotton, had 2,000 pounds following corn. So that's a 500-pound difference. Even with good cotton prices and poor grain prices, it's hard to overcome that economic component. But yes, we are, and that's what, you know, from a farmer perspective, economics drives his decision making. You know, we talk about maximum yields. A lot of times maximum yields and economic yields are not the same. In fact, most of the time they're not. So I know I'm out of time because I'm going into Paul's time. Thank you.